Part 4. Gravity Meets the Quantum. Unifying relativity and quantum theory is a bit like the case of the irresistible force meeting the immovable rock. Both theories are based on compelling principles, but they can't both be completely right because contradictions arise when we try to unite them. It's hard to know which needs to give way. Decades of effort have converged on two main approaches, one growing out of particle physics, string theory, and the other out of relativity, loop quantum gravity, as well as other contenders that are still very much in the running. String theory is the choice of the majority of physicists, but loop gravity and the other alternatives have important insights as well. Chapter 11. The Paradox of the Graviton. In this chapter, putting the quantum in quantum gravity, introducing the graviton particle, going for a spin, why points pose problems, understanding the gravity of the situation. How hard could it be, really, to make a quantum theory of gravity? After all, quantum theory manages to explain the other forces of nature just fine. Why should gravity be any different? Well, try to force-fit gravity into the quantum framework, and the framework will buckle. The primacy of quantum theory. The very term quantum gravity implies that unifying quantum theory with relativity theory won't be a merger so much as a takeover. Quantum theory gets to keep the corporate logo, while relativity becomes just one of the subsidiaries. Where the two conflict, relativity will be the one to give way. The reasoning is simple and persuasive. Quantum theory is the most successful theoretical framework in the history of the physical sciences. It can do everything pre-quantum theories can and so much more. Those pre-quantum theories work well for the situations humans typically encounter, but once we venture into new settings, they run out of steam. They just can't handle the range of phenomena that quantum theory can, not only exotic ones such as superconductors and quantum computers, but also humdrum ones, such as the fact atoms don't implode. Quantum theory has subsumed all the theories that preceded it, with the lone exception of general relativity. Einstein's theory has to join the party sometime. In it, gravity arises from the presence of matter and energy. Matter and energy are inherently quantum, so it makes sense for gravity to be too. Quantum fluctuations in matter and energy should naturally give rise to fluctuations in the gravitational field, which will take a quantum theory of gravity to describe coherently. So far, relativity has held out because the tension becomes unbearable only in extreme settings, such as black holes. But eventually, it'll have to find a way to fit in. Though not strictly wrong, it may prove to be an approximation to a deeper theory, or it might just need to be reformulated. Meet the graviton. If quantum theory supersedes relativity in the same way it superseded other pre-quantum theories, then gravity, like the other forces of nature, must be transmitted by a dedicated type of particle. Physicists in the 1930s dubbed it the graviton. It bears a certain resemblance to a little-known particle you have created in your living room, the carpeton. When you shove on one side of a carpet, you create a ripple in the fabric. As you try to smooth it out, it slithers across the room, shifting the position of the coffee table, plastic toy lizards, and anything else lying around. If a remote control car is driving across the rug, the ripple pushes it off course. A carpeton is the gentlest possible ripple you could make. Add enough of them up, and you can get a wave capable of toppling the furniture. Gravity is nothing more or less than a distortion of the space-time fabric. Altering the gravitational field exerted by a body creates a gravitational wave, which takes on a life of its own and spreads out through space-time, reshaping it. Definition: the graviton is the hypothetical particle that transmits the force of gravity. It is the smallest unit of a gravitational wave. A gravitational wave is a ripple in the gravitational field and therefore in the fabric of space and time. Distant bodies, gliding along the contours of space-time, shift onto new paths. In quantum theory, the wave consists of gravitons. Celestial motions typically involve the production of billions upon billions of gravitons, each causing such a small effect on its own that you can ignore the individual particles and focus on their cumulative effects, which is what general relativity describes. Physicists model the graviton on its electromagnetic counterpart, the photon. Both are generated when something disturbs their respective fields, gravitational or electromagnetic. For instance, a radio transmitter creates photons by pushing or pulling on electrically charged particles, typically electrons. A gravitational wave transmitter creates gravitons by pushing or pulling on particles of any sort. For gravitons, the role of electric charge is played by mass and energy. The more massive a particle or other object, the more gravitons you create by wiggling it. Quantum leap. Want to create some gravitons? Get working. You'd have to wave your arms once a second for a million years to generate enough energy for a single graviton. The orbit of Earth around the Sun produces about as much energy in gravitons as a single light bulb produces in photons. Serious graviton production takes a tightly orbiting pair of stars. According to pre-quantum theories, if an object is sitting still and not disturbing its field, it doesn't produce waves of any sort. After all, if nothing happens, nothing needs to be transmitted. A comb with a static electric charge doesn't need to keep beaming electromagnetic waves at your hair to keep it standing on end. Once the waves sculpt the electric field around your hair, their job is done. The field is what keeps it levitated. Quantum theory sees things a little differently. It describes forces not as a field that gets locked into place, but as a continual exchange of virtual photons, even in the absence of a disturbance. Most physicists think that gravitons work the same way. According to general relativity, the Sun doesn't need to keep beaming gravitational waves at Earth to keep it in orbit. The space-time fabric, once bent into shape, guides our planet. In the quantum version, gravity is conveyed by a continual exchange of virtual gravitons. Despite their many similarities, gravitons and photons have conspicuous differences that get to the heart of what makes quantum gravity so much harder than quantum electromagnetism. For starters, whereas sensitive detectors can spot individual photons, they don't have much hope of ever picking up individual gravitons. Even trying to catch them en masse pushes modern technology to its limits. So gravitons will probably always be hypothetical. Even so, they will play an important conceptual role by helping to explain the harmony of nature. Putting a spin on it. A deeper difference between gravitons and photons arises because electric charges come in two types, positive and negative. Photons affect them differently, ensuring that like charges repel and unlike charges attract. Gravity, on the other hand, affects all bodies in the same way. Matter, antimatter, positive energy, negative energy, Democrats, Republicans, makes no difference. Drop them all from the Tower of Pisa and they'll all hit the ground at the same time. They're falling freely through the same patch of space, so nothing differentiates them. Consequently, when gravitons pass through a material, they must be completely even-handed. They can stretch the material horizontally as long as they squeeze it vertically to compensate. A moment later, the graviton squeezes where it had stretched and stretches where it had squeezed. Depending on the thickness of the material and on the wavelength of the graviton, it could go through many cycles of squeezing and stretching until finally exiting and leaving the material as it was. This gravitational kneading remains the same even if we rotate the wave by 90 degrees. Over a full cycle of the wave, there's no difference between horizontal and vertical. The graviton alternately squeezes and stretches in both directions. In contrast, we have to rotate an electromagnetic wave by 180 degrees to keep its effect the same. If we rotate by just 90 degrees, the wave will cause electric charges that had been oscillating left and right to start wobbling up and down instead. In this sense, gravitons have the symmetry of a plus sign. A quarter turn keeps it the same, whereas photons have the symmetry of a negative sign. Only a half turn does. So they are twice as symmetrical as photons. In the jargon, the photon is spin 1, whereas the graviton is spin 2. This might sound like a minor change, but it makes a big difference. For one thing, we can flip the argument around. If we come across a spin 2 particle, we have good reason to think it produces a force that treats all bodies equally, a force none other than gravity. The extra symmetry of the graviton requires the complex mathematics of general relativity to describe. This is how it dawned on physicists that string theory might be a quantum theory of gravity. They developed the theory for other purposes, discovered that it predicts a spin 2 particle, and realized it might be the long-sought quantum theory of gravity. Caught in an infinite loop. Albert Einstein spent the last third of his life working on a unified theory of physics, based on the idea that the similarities between electromagnetism and gravitation mattered more than their differences. However, this turned out not to be the case. Electromagnetism is actually more closely related to nuclear forces, which at first seems so unlike it. Electromagnetism and nuclear forces have the special property that they are scale invariant. This means that no matter how closely we look at a particle or how extreme the conditions become, electromagnetism acts in essentially the same way. Its strength does vary somewhat, but this doesn't reflect a fundamental change in behavior. A slight adjustment of the electric charge and the masses of charged particles fully captures this variation. If someone showed you a picture of a magnetic field, you'd be hard-pressed to tell whether it was produced by a star, a planet, a refrigerator magnet, or a magnetite nanoparticle. Gravity, on the other hand, is scale-dependent. Unlike electric charge, gravitational charge, namely mass and energy, varies hugely with scale. As we turn up the microscope magnification, or smash particles together at ever greater speeds, gravity not only gets vastly stronger, but also behaves in qualitatively new ways. The effects of scale become evident when we try to predict how photons or gravitons pass between two bodies. In quantum theory, everything not forbidden is compulsory, and there's nothing to stop the particles from spontaneously splitting and reuniting. So they do, with some probability. The humblest exchange of a photon or graviton triggers a mighty cascade of them. For photons, though, the splitting follows a very rigid pattern. Whatever the energy of the photon, it splits and reunites in the same way. The interaction is merely scaled up or scaled down in size. The situation is like measuring the length of a coastline or a tree. The closer you look, the more rugged it gets. But each level is just a miniaturized version of the previous one. In principle, the endless progression of zigs and zags adds up to an infinite length, but knowing the trend, we have no trouble measuring the length to any desired precision. When we get down to the atomic level, the calculation presumably fails, but until then, it works just fine. Similarly, we can calculate the strength of a photon, whatever its energy. Dealing with the exchange of gravitons is far harder. Because of gravity's scale dependence, the pattern of splitting and reuniting is like a coastline or tree that gets increasingly rococo as you zoom in. We must assume that some outrageously baroque things befall the gravitons on their journey, and the more extreme the conditions, the more baroque things we need to postulate. The gravity we observe under ordinary circumstances is no guide to what happens under extraordinary circumstances. In short, The very theory that introduced the graviton is unable to describe it fully. It predicts that even the most routine exchange of a graviton becomes infinitely complex, so gravity becomes infinitely strong. One response is to revamp the theory. That's what string theory does. It supposes that general relativity must be an incomplete theory of gravity. The other is to give up trying to build up a theory particle by particle. That is loop quantum gravity's response. It supposes that gravity can't be incorporated into quantum theory using the same techniques that work so well for the other forces. There's too much room at the bottom. The fact that gravity is scale-dependent is a case of good news, bad news. The Planck scale appears in neither quantum theory nor general relativity on its own. Each of these theories treats space-time as a smooth continuum. In principle, there's no limit to how closely we can zoom in. Space-time is like a computer screen with infinite resolution. Its pixels are true mathematical points, having zero size. Anytime the number zero appears, the number infinity can't be far behind. If particles interact at points of zero size, don't their properties have to change with infinite speed? How could a point have internal properties such as electric charge when the concept of internal has no meaning for it? Any region of space-time consists of an infinite number of points, requiring an infinite amount of information to account for all the possible goings-on. And isn't that just plain silly? In the loop. It always bothers me that according to the laws as we understand them today, it takes a computing machine an infinite number of logical operations to figure out what goes on in no matter how tiny a region of space, and no matter how tiny a region of time. How can all that be going on in that tiny space? Why should it take an infinite amount of logic to figure out what one tiny piece of space-time is going to do? Richard Feynman, Caltech. Interestingly, although both theories raise these questions, their union doesn't. Although the theories let us zoom in as closely as we want, they do so in opposite ways. In quantum theory, we dial up the energy to zoom in, whereas in general relativity, we turn it down. These contrary tendencies intersect at the Planck scale, and the zoom mechanism jams. The Planck scale appears to be the shortest distance that has any meaning, setting a limit to how finely subdivided space-time can be. Space-time may not, in fact, be a smooth continuum. So the good news is that quantum theory and general relativity yet again plug each other's gaps. Their merger could also help tame the graviton as well as the wild horses of the Standard Model. Just as atoms keep the length of a coastline from going infinite, because the zigs and zags of the coastline can't be any smaller than the width of an atom, the Planck scale stops particles from splitting endlessly. Now here's the bad news. There's a good reason that current theories treat space-time as a continuum. It keeps special relativity happy. When events occur at specific points in space and time, everybody agrees on the sequence of cause and effect. But if events are spread out, even over a distance as short as the Planck scale, people might disagree, potentially leading to the same paradoxes as time travel does. For instance, we could arrange things so that an effect becomes its own cause. In trying to marry quantum concepts with general relativity, a matchmaker will have to keep Einstein's other theory from getting jealous and walking out. When the ground comes alive. The above problems are aspects of a deeper issue. Calling gravity a force between two bodies is like calling an earthquake a strange rattling noise in the china cabinet. The shaking of a tremor is only one consequence of what's reshaping the entire landscape, which can have much more dramatic effects, like making Los Angeles a suburb of San Francisco. Similarly, the force of gravity is only one consequence of what's reshaping the landscape of space-time, which has much broader effects. The theory of gravitons doesn't capture those effects. It can't. Quantum theory is based on a conception of space-time that goes back to Newton, a fixed scaffolding that pinpoints where and when things are. The world according to quantum theory evolves moment to moment, and the pace of events is the same everywhere. Different people may have different time conventions, but each assumes that the passage of a second in one place means the same as the passage of a second somewhere else. It's as if the universe had a master clock. This master clock keeps quantum theory consistent. At any given instant, a particle can be located in one of many possible locations, each with a certain probability. The master clock ensures that we can add up all those probabilities so that they always come to 100%. We may not know exactly where the particle is, but it has to be somewhere. In the loop. The notion of time used in conventional quantum theory is grounded firmly in Newtonian physics. Chris Isham, Imperial College, London. General relativity tosses that clock out the window. The pace of events varies from place to place. A second in one place doesn't mean the same as a second in another. In some situations, it's impossible to tell what is space and what is time, let alone set up a master clock. Nor is there a fixed number of locations where a particle could lurk. For instance, the expanding universe creates new space. A graviton does this, too, on a lesser but still significant scale. All particles travel through space and time, but the graviton also modifies the space and time it's traveling in. It's a ripple of, rather than in, space-time. So the graviton alters the framework that its own existence depends on. Going back to carpetons, if you jerk your carpet strongly enough, you don't just create a little bump. You fold the carpet on itself, flip it over, or wrap it around your grandmother. Where, in that case, is the carpeton? There's no longer a single bump, even a big one, you could point to. The whole concept of a carpeton breaks down. Similarly, if a graviton is strong enough, how can we even talk of a particle propagating through space? Where is it? Where's it going? Physicists say that the graviton theory is background-dependent, meaning that there's a fixed space-time, the background, that we can always use to situate the graviton. Ultimately, a quantum theory of gravity needs to be background-independent, describing space-time as fully malleable. String theory and loop gravity take very different approaches to achieving this goal. Loop gravity aims to be background independent from the outset, whereas string theory starts off as background dependent and then relates what happens on different backgrounds. Gravitons raise some of the same issues that black holes, the Big Bang, and time travel do. When physicists try to fit the relativity peg into the quantum hole, one victim is the principle of determinism, the concept that everything that happens happens for a reason. Given the state of the world at one time, the theories claim to be able to predict the state of the world any time later. But how can we predict the state of the world later if we can't even consistently identify later? So the central insight of general relativity, a dynamical space-time, pulls the rug out from under quantum theory. Either we shouldn't take general relativity completely seriously, or the merger of the two theories needs to be a merger of equals after all. The least you need to know. Physicists think gravity is transmitted by hypothetical particles called gravitons. Gravitons resemble other force-transmitting particles such as photons, but they have crucial differences. The behavior of gravitons keeps changing as we probe more to finer scales until we need a whole new theory. This problem reflects the fact that gravitons affect the very space through which they travel.